nodded tersely. Grim rose to his feet and let Talon out of his sling.
"Well, now what, Lord Celestant?"
he said.
"We're here, wherever here is."
"Talbion," Gardas repeated. How did he know its name, Grim wondered. Obviously he'd learnt it, wherever he'd learned of its existence, but it was nonetheless disconcerting. Gardas knew things no other Stormcast did.
"It might as well be the Brimstone Peninsula for all that that name means to me, Gardas. My question stands."
"What now?"
Grim asked. Overhead, the grey-green fog clouds that plagued the floating isles rumbled angrily, and an unclean rain began to fall. Grim grunted in disgust as the oily water pelted his armour and the mist seemed to condense about them, like the coils of an agitated serpent. Zavaclius and Ultrades trotted towards them. The Lord Celestant of the Astral Templars swiped at the mist.
"Nothing like a good climb. Don't care for this mist, though. Smells like those beasts we fought at the Vulturine Geysers."
"It is the work of the Ruinous Powers," Ultrades said.
"This island, much like the realm of Giran itself, is a prisoner of Nurgle," Gardas said. "This cursed pox mist is holding the island in place. We must somehow disperse it, and in doing so, free the island and then Giran itself." He looked at the Lord Relictor and gestured with his hammer. "Morbus, call down the lightning." Morbus inclined his head and lifted his reliquary. He began to chant, his hollow tones rising above the patter of the rain. Azure lightning began to crackle within the depths of the reliquary, and it spread to the mist, flashing through it. It grew in strength, until it was blinding in its ferocity. The mist and smog writhed in the grip of the energy, like a serpent in the claws of a bird of prey. Morbus's voice rose in pitch, his harsh tones lashing out with the savagery of the storm itself. Grim could feel the power of the Lord Relictor, as it thrummed through the air and waged war on the very elements themselves. Morbus rarely stirred himself to such heights, but when he did, it was a sight to behold. Grim watched in awe as the mist began to burn away, seared to nothing by the fury of Morbus's storm. He felt the ground beneath his feet shudder as if in gratitude. Grim looked up and met Gardas's solemn gaze.
"Do you feel it, Loras?
The island quakes, grateful to its bedrock. This is the realm of Giran, and even the stones themselves bristle with the stuff of life," he said. The rain, once filthy, became as clean and pure as the summer storms of Azir itself. Gardas lifted his arms and tilted his head back.
"We have freed you, Great Island! Now bear us east, to the river's mouth!"
Gardas's voice echoed from the low peaks of the floating island. Silence stretched out for several long moments. Not a single soul in the gathered storm hosts dared speak. Then, with a rumble, the island began to shudder beneath their feet. Grim looked about and saw the clouds in the sky moving. No, not the clouds. The island itself. The airborne mountain had begun to slide eastward through the pale emerald skies of Giran. Grim shook his head, incredulous.
"How?"
he asked. Gardas said nothing for a moment. Grim wondered if the Lord Celestant was as surprised as he was. Then Gardas lifted his hammer and roared,
"Who will be victorious?"
"Only the faithful."
"Only the faithful."
Chapter 10. The Bursting of the World Pimple.
"Well, there's something you don't see every day,"
Morbidex Twiceborn said, looking up at the island as it hove to through the clouds far above. Its shadows stretched across the heartlands of Rotwater Blight. Tripletongue grunted, and Morbidex patted the Magoth's head. Morbidex and his fellow Magoth lords had been stationed here to prevent the Stormcasts from advancing on the source of the Jellied Gush, as well as the roots of the Oak of Ages Past. Torglug, Spume, and the others were positioned at the other various crossings and headwaters. Every conceivable route to Pupa Grotes and his bathwaters was guarded by the Grandfather's Own, on the orders of the Glotkin. Morbidex glanced over his shoulder, back towards the distant shape of the Great Unclean One. Pupa Grotes was larger than any other examples of his kind that Morbidex had ever had the pleasure of knowing. He was a mountain of jolly filth, though even he was made to look small next to the immense roots of the oak of ages past.
"Ever seen the like, Bloab?"
he called out to his fellow Magoth lord. Bloab Rotspawn shook his hooded head, causing the swarm of insects that accompanied him everywhere to flutter about in agitation. He was a bulky lump, whose flesh, where it was not hidden by his black armour, was covered in insect bites and raised pustules, and his tattered robes were stained with strange ichor and covered in squirming maggots.
"And you one of me, Morbidex?"
Bloab droned.
"Even Bilespurter is in awe, eh?"
He scratched the mottled flesh of his Magoth. Bilespurter gave a warbling snort in reply. Bloab turned towards Orghot's demon spew, the third of the Magoth riders present at the edge of the jellied gush, where the world pimples bulged obscenely.
"What say you, Orghots?"
"What is there to say, companions mine? 'Tis an island, and she floats,"
Orghots rumbled through malformed lips. His Magoth shifted impatiently, and he gave its scaly skull a thump with the flat of one of the two large rot axes he carried.
"Be still, Whippermore. Thy hunger will soon be sated."
He sat back in his saddle, his armour creaking.
"I do wonder at his eye."
He stroked the great horn of demon bone that sprouted from the side of his face, jaw to crown.
"Think it be our enemies twice born?"
"The clots certainly must. Otherwise Girk wouldn't be ambling towards us with all the grace of an avalanche,"
Morbidex said, pointing towards the massive shape of Girk Glot, knuckling his way across the mire towards them, his siblings perched securely on his immense shoulders. Girk splashed through the shallow waters with an excited bellow, shouldering aside a mossy cairn in his haste.
"What ho, Glotkin! Come to deliver us victory!"
Morbidex shouted, cupping his hands around his mouth.
"Do the silver skins draw close? Is it to be battle at last? Triple Tug is hungry."
"Not here, not yet," Otto Glot replied loudly. "Not if Ethrak is right."
"Of course I'm right, brother mine. The evidence hangs above us. They're not stopping here,"
Ethrak said, as Girk loped past them, scattering Magoths and Nurglings alike in his haste.
"They bypassed Torglug's forces at River's Crossing, and Slaugoth's host as well."
The sorcerer pointed towards the island, sliding through the sky above.
"Somehow they freed one of the cursed sky mountains of Talbion from the Grandfather's pox clouds, and convinced it to float towards the source waters of the jellied gush."
Morbidex and his companions turned their Magoths about and set the beasts into motion in Girk's wake. The Magoths had to gallop to keep up with the biggest Glot sibling. Morbidex leaned forward in his saddle.
"Where are the others? What should we do?"
"We're already doing it,"
Ethrak snapped. He stamped on Girk's head.
"Keep an even keel, brother. I'm engaged in delicate sorceries here."
Ethrak had a brazier standing before him, attached to Girk's harness. It smoked and spat as he chanted over its open flame, wringing his hands in an ornate fashion. The smoke tensed like a thing alive as Ethrak's voice rose in pitch, and before Morbidex's astonished eyes, it split like the petals of a gaseous flower, and a horde of insectile demons, ridden by plague-bearers, spilled upwards into existence. They were without number, and far too large to have truly emerged from the brazier's open mouth. The plague drones rose in a buzzing cloud, gossamer wings throbbing with an irregular rhythm.
"Go, my pretties!"
Ethrak wailed, thrusting a finger towards the distant form of the flying mountain.
"Rain down pox and peril, and make them rue the day they ever tested Grandfather's patience!"
At his command, the twisting cloud of demons tumbled upwards like a swarm of outsized hornets and swept across the sky towards the island. Morbidex gave a cheer.
Ha! Look at them go!
He roared. He leaned over Triple Tongue's head and said,
"Would that you had wings, Triple Tongue, and we could join them."
He straightened and looked at Ethrak, who had slumped back into Otto's arms, exhausted by his magics. It was no easy thing to call forth the grandfather's aerial guard so far from a realm gate or other pestilential portal. The very air of Gyron resisted such magics, even now, with grandfather's claws hooked deep in the soil.
"What now? As much confidence as I have in your sorcery, I don't think the plague drones can bring that rock down by themselves."
"Be at ease, Twiceborn. The Glots have a plan." "Yes, we do," Otto said.
He extended his scythe towards one of the great boils of earth and mud rising from the face of Rotwater Blight.
"We'll see how well that island stays afloat with geezers of grandfather's own pus dappling its belly."
"Well,"
Morbidex thought, grinning in pleasure,
"can't say I haven't thought of doing something similar since I first laid eyes on them."
The world pimples were a sign of the grandfather's interest in the realm of life, and a mark of how deep his influence truly went. The blessed muck and filth of the garden had spread to Gyron, fertilizing the weak land and giving it some pomp and girth. The world pimples had formed soon after Pupa Grotesse had wedged his bulk into the river, bursting out of the ripe soil and spreading across the blight. Every few decades, one of the pimples would burst, unable to contain the pressure building up within it, filling the air with the familiar scents of Nurgle's garden. Girk and the Magoths loped towards the largest of the world pimples, followed by Morbidex's Nurglings, who could sense a good time when one was in the offing. Morbidex extended his scythe down past Triple Tongue's knees so that the quickest of his tiny charges could catch hold of the blade and swing themselves up onto the Magoth's flanks. Despite the speed of the great beasts, it still took some time to reach their destination. Morbidex sat back and let the rhythm of Triple Tongue's barreling gaits put him at ease. Bloab did much the same, the fat sorcerer sitting head bowed, looking for all the world as if he were asleep. Orcots, however, incited Whippermore to greater and greater speeds, wrapping the Magoth's flanks with the flat of his axes.
"Never any patience, that one,"
Morbidex thought, watching his old ally bellow curses and snatches from ancient songs. On they rode, across the mires and fens of Rotwater Blight, and above them all, the island crept closer and closer, until its shadow all but swallowed them up. Morbidex could feel the ancient power flowing through the airborne mass of soil and rock. It was unlike anything in the grandfather's garden, but somehow familiar all the same. It was the power of life unrestrained, life without limit or end, and admirable in its own way.
"Aye, it'll be a shame to see you gone, but grandfather bids it,"
Morbidex thought. The world would be better when such things knew their place, in any event. Gyron had yet to be tamed. That was why the Glots were so determined to find the so-called Radiant Queen. It was Alariel who was somehow stymieing Nurgle's advances in this realm. Alariel, whose subtle song raised forests to walk and cleanse that which had been fairly befouled. And it was Alariel whom Nurgle wanted. It was said, by those who would know, that there was a cage of crystalline pus, hardened in the heat of Nurgle's cauldron, somewhere in the garden, waiting for its prisoner. When the Radiant Queen was at last his, these knowledgeable sorts said, grandfather would cage her, and hang her from his bower, and listen to her beautiful song into eternity.
"Who says the gods don't understand romance?"
Morbidex thought, as he brought Triple Tongue to a halt in a cloud of dust. The largest of the world pimples was a truly mountainous boil of dripping earth, topped by a cloudy bubble of beautiful vileness. It was magnificent.
"Too bad,"
Morbidex murmured.
"What was that, Twiceborn?"
Otto asked, peering down at him. The oldest of the Glots was a bulky warrior, as big as Morbidex, and his lumpen frame was fair to bursting with the favour of Nurgle. He carried a scythe, like Morbidex, though his was wreathed with even more baleful enchantments.
"I said it's a shame,"
Morbidex said, reclining in his saddle. He scratched the chin of a Nurgling.
"Think of how big it might get."
"We all must make sacrifices to keep pests out of the garden," Otto said.
He smacked Girk on the head with the butt of his scythe.
"Hup, Girk! Give it a squeeze!"
Girk made a sound of assent and reached out with his giant tentacle. The tendril slithered about the cusp of the world pimple and contracted with a sound like grinding rocks.
"Hurry, Girk," Otto said as he hunched forward. "Hurry! They're almost past us!"
Morbidex looked up and saw the island pass overhead. Soil and rocks fell from its vast belly to smash into the mire below. Water exploded upwards as a chunk of rock hammered down nearby, and Tripletongue gave a bleat of surprise. Morbidex leaned forward and dug his fingers into the Maggoth's hide.
"Easy, you fearful brute. Just a bit of soil. Think nothing of it,"
he grated, even as he cocked an eye towards the hovering landmass.
"Mayhap we should seek safer ground,"
Orcott said, looking around warily. More stones fell, plopping into the water with ground-shaking finality. Bodies fell with them too, some clad in silver, others dripping with Nurgle's blessings. Ethrak's demons had met the enemy, and the air was rent by the sounds of battle as winged stormcasts clashed with plague drones. Morbidex watched, momentarily distracted by the aerial war. He'd never seen the like, at least not in the mortal realms. Where the grandfather's garden abutted the killing fields of corn or the colourful palaces of Zinch's realm, such conflicts were commonplace. But those things were but grand duels, exaggerated and only mockingly serious. This, however, was true war, and part of him longed to be up there amidst it. He glanced around and saw that his fellow Maggoth lords were as rapt as he was, watching the Skyborn battle. Then Girk roared, and with a sound like splitting rock, the world pimple ruptured. Chapter 11. Battle in the Sky.
"Only the faithful!"
Tegra shouted, as he folded his wings and arrowed towards the plague drone. Hammer crashed against plague sword as he swept past. Prosecutors from three storm hosts had launched themselves aloft to engage the demon flyers, as the latter swarmed the island, seeking to attack those who stood upon it. As he swooped through the air, back towards his quarry, Tegras could see the grey-green reaches of Rotwater Blight spreading out far below him. There, too, was the shattered husk of the Oak of Ages Past, larger than a range of foothills, and rising up as if to catch hold of the sky. From its end flowed a ribbon of pure crystal water, turning midstream to a flow of putrid slop. There, squatting amidst that filth, was the being they had come to find, the great unclean one that Gardas had spoken of. "You were right, Steel Soul," he thought, as he rolled through the air. One of his hammers snapped out to catch a plague-bearer in the head. His blow sent the demon tumbling from its buzzing mount. The fly contorted with malign urgency, its hairy legs crashing against Tegras's armour as it sought to crush him. The acrid stench of it washed over him, choking him. With a strangled shout, he drove his hammers into its pulsing thorax, rupturing the shiny carapace and covering himself in a pungent tide of squirming maggots. The fly plummeted from the air, following its rider to the ground far below. Tegras grimaced and pressed his hammer to his chest, burning away the creatures that clung to the Sigmarite. He looked around, taking in the aerial battle going on around him. When the demons had appeared, every prosecutor capable of flight had thrown themselves into the air. Tegras himself had been eager for the fray. It had been too long since the battle at the Cairns. His quarry, the bloated beast rider calling himself Morbidex, had escaped Sigmar's justice, fleeing deeper into the swamp. Though Tegras had pursued him, his foe had escaped. The thought of the beast rider's gurning face still sent a pulse of anger through him.
such a creature, steeped as it was in the stuff of chaos, could not be allowed to live. But Gardus had commanded him to leave it be, fearing perhaps that his prosecutor Prime was being led into an ambush. In his heart he knew the Lord Celestant was right. Nonetheless, he was frustrated. And when the plague drones had shown up, he had seen them as an opportunity to work out some of those frustrations. So he fought, waging war in the manner to which he had become accustomed. It had taken some getting used to, in those early days after he'd been raised up to the ranks of the Stormcasts, reforged from the simple hunter he had been, and made into one of Sigmar's avenging warriors. Rarely did he think of those bygone days. He knew some of his fellow Stormcasts dreamed of their old lives, or were tormented by memories they did not recognize. But for him, the past was the past. It was as banished as the demon whose head he'd just split. More plague drones hummed towards him, swooping and diving. Tegras turned and gave a flap of his wings, pushing himself back towards the island. He led his pursuers low over the ranks of the Stormcasts, and the bows of the Judicators sang. Tegras heard a dim rumble from somewhere far below. He swooped out over the rim of the island, and his eyes widened as he saw the geyser of boiling pus rising from the mire below. Alarmed, he turned, wings flapping, knowing even as he flew that he would not be able to warn the others in time. He didn't know what it was, but it was nothing good. The pus splashed against the underside of the island with a roar, causing the great mountain to quake down to its roots. It pitched to the side, like a vessel caught in the grip of a storm, and where the pus struck, it clung, a greenish vapour issuing forth in great blistering gouts. The island fought to stay aloft, sagging and rising, but Tegras could see that it was doomed to fail. Whatever magic, life force, or animating spirit kept it afloat, it was still weak from the vile rains that Lord Relictor Morbus's magic had dispatched. The jet of burning pus was eating away at its roots and hollows, carving great wounds in its belly and sides. The mountain began to shudder. Tegras flew over the heads of Gardus and the others, shouting, "It's coming apart! If you value your lives, hold on!" Stormcast leapt to obey, anchoring themselves the best they could as the shuddering grew in strength, until whole sections of the rocky slopes gave way and slid down, tumbling into the void below. Several Stormcasts were caught by the falling rocks and carried to their deaths. Others raised their shields or called out Sigmar's name, as if by his hand they might gain the strength to survive the next few moments. "Steady!" Gardus roared. The Lord Celestant stabbed his sword into the ground to anchor himself, and the others did the same. Even so, dozens of Stormcasts were thrown from their perches, or ripped upwards by the force of the island's descent. Tegras and the prosecutors not still engaged in battle with the plague drones soared upwards, fighting the storm, trying to save any that they could. Their wings crackled as they forced themselves up against the drag of the island's passage. Their wings had been forged by Sigmar himself, each feather a scintilla of the God King's holy lightning, and they flashed brightly as they beat. Tegras narrowed his eyes, fighting to see through the wind and the vast contrail of foul steam spilling from the wounded island. A glint of silver caught his eye, and he bent towards it, rolling through the air. His wings tore through the cloud of steam, and he saw a number of liberators falling upwards. As Tegras neared them, one came apart in a flash of blue light, returning to Sigmaron to be reforged. Tegras put on speed, trying to reach the other two before they met a similar fate. Tegras caught one of the liberators by the hand, even as the second hurtled out of reach, disappearing into the clouds. There was a flash of blue. "I'm sorry, brother," he thought, as he banked and turned back towards the island. Other prosecutors sailed upwards, continuing in their efforts. "Hold fast, brother," he said to the Stormcast whose wrist he held. "I will get you down in one piece if I'm able." The liberator's reply was lost in the howl of the wind. Tegras aimed himself towards the island, hoping that it would hold together long enough to land more or less safely. The mountain drifted lower and lower, losing pieces of itself all the while, as the acidic pus ate away at it from roots to crags. A dull groan, as of a living thing in agony, rose from it as it sank towards the shallows of the River Vitalis. Tegras rose upwards as the island struck the ground with a thunderous roar. Entire mobs of plague demons were crushed beneath it as it fell, and more were similarly obliterated as the island collapsed in on itself. A tsunami of infected water surged back along the course of the river, escaping the banks and washing over the massive shape of the great unclean one squatting at the river's heart. Tegras stared in horror at the monstrosity. The creature was far larger than the beast that had attacked them in the Gaia-tract fen, as if swollen by the stolen vitality of the river. The greater demon roared in outrage as the dust thrown up by the island's fall began to clear and yanked a rusted flail from the water. Pupa Grotesse forced himself to his feet with a second rolling bellow and slashed out with the flail, smashing at the river. Turgid, brown-frothed waves smacked into the remains of the island, washing over it and clearing the dust and steam. Tegras dropped from the air, depositing his burden. The Liberator looked at him. "Holanus," he said, raising the hammer he'd somehow managed to retain in salute. "Tegras," Tegras said, returning the warrior's salute. He looked around. He saw no other stormcasts. He couldn't even see his prosecutors, thanks to the haze thrown up by the island's descent. Talbion crumbled behind them, dying, if not already dead. Tegras felt something that might have been sadness as he watched the mass of rock and earth split and dissolve in the flowing waters of the river. There had been something, some spirit, some soul in it, that was, while not human, still a life to be mourned. "We will not see your like again," he thought, as he turned back to face the distant shape of the great unclean one. It was enormous. Almost a mountain in its own right, if a mountain could walk. Where its shadow fell, the water frothed and was made foul, and its motion set the river to churning. "And that is the beast Gardas spoke of," Alanus said. "Aye, it is," Tegras replied. He said it calmly, masking the worry he felt. Perhaps the others were simply trapped. He had seen no telltale flash of azure, signalling the demise of his fellows. Either way, they were not in evidence. Tegras made ready to thrust himself into the air once more. If he could get above the beast, he might be able to distract it long enough for Alanus to get in close. He turned to say as much to his fellow Stormcast, when Alanus suddenly gave a grunt of pain and stumbled. Tegras spun and saw a plague-bearer rising from the water behind the Liberator. Some of the demons had survived the island's fall, after all. This one had found a gap in Olanus's armour, and it wrenched its sword free with a ghastly grin as blue light erupted from the eye and mouth slits of the dying Liberator's helm. Tegras moved to strike the beast down, but a splash from behind alerted him to his own danger. More of the demons burst from the fetid waters and launched themselves at him, rusty blades drawing sparks from his hammers as he interposed them. More plague-bearers rose around him, erupting from the water like aggressive flotsam. He fought desperately, trying to hold them at bay. His wings snapped out, swift as sword strikes, their crackling feathers burning open, loathsome guts, as his hammers shattered diseased blades and plague-ridden bones alike. But there were too many of them. Rotting hands caught his limbs and he was yanked off balance. He fell onto his back in the water, frantically parrying the weapons that sought his belly and head. Plague-bearers flung themselves on him, weighing him down, scrabbling at his armour, seeking to pry open the gaps so that their fellows could finish him off. Tegras screamed in futile rage as his forearms were pinned beneath the water and a flabby, peeling foot crashed onto his chest, holding him down. The plague-bearer that stood on him raised its sword in two hands for a killing thrust. It leered down at him, single eye burning with malign pleasure as it considered his plight. Tegras thrashed, but was unable to tear himself free. Suddenly, his would-be killer's skull burst like an overripe fruit. A sword flashed, lopping off limbs and chopping through heads, and then Tegras was free. He looked up as Garda sheathed his sword and extended his free hand.
Up, Tegras. I need you in the sky, Prosecutor.
Gladly, Lord Celestant. I confess I am not at my best on the ground,
Tegras said, as Gardas pulled him to his feet. Gardas nodded.
So I noticed.
He stepped back and raised his hammer. Beyond him, Tegras saw silver-clad shapes emerge from the murk thrown up by the death throes of the island. Grim, Morbus, and others, including astral templars and guardians of the firmament, strode through the swirling waters, weapons in hand. Gardas, hammer held over his head, shouted,
"Who will be triumphant?"
"Only the faithful," came the reply.
Tegras added his voice to the rest, glorying in the thought of the battle to come. Gardas was with them. They had survived every horror the enemy could throw at them, and now they stood on the cusp of victory. Pupa Grotes roared in fury and slammed his flail down again and again. Every time the weapon crashed down, the water erupted in flopping, splashing shapes, slug-like monstrosities with gnashing teeth and flailing limbs, which bounded through the river towards the storm casts with unseemly speed. Gardas faced the oncoming horde and drew his rune blade with his free hand.
"Who stands with me?"
he called.
"Only the faithful,"
Tegras and the others responded, their voices rising into a communal roar as they clashed weapons and struck shields in a fierce display.
"Only the faithful!"
Gardas shouted. And then the enemy was upon them, and there was no more time for words. Chapter 12. The Naming of the Beast.
"Forward! For Sigma! For Gyron and the Celestial Realm!"
Gardas called out. He crushed the skull of one of the beasts of Nurgle as it tried to flatten him beneath its weight. The great beasts had crashed into the Stormcast's vanguard like eager children, shrugging off stab wounds and hammer blows with gurgling aplomb. They bellied and crushed their way through the ranks of the Hallowed Knights, warbling as they surged through the water. They had been joined by plague-bearers, who rose from the befouled river and launched themselves at the distracted Stormcasts. But it was the beasts of Nurgle who were the true danger here, large and tough as they were. Only the Retributors had proven capable of felling the creatures, and with each swing of their hammers they had reduced the demons to gobbets of wet ash. Zevaclius led the Retributors of all three storm hosts forward, his armour dappled with gore as he fought his way to the front. Gardas's fellow Lord Celestance was a man of few words, but possessed an almost limitless capacity for violence, and was in his own way almost as eager for battle as the beasts he fought. In contrast to the savagery of Zevaclius and his amethyst-armoured warriors, Ultrades and his guardians of the firmament were of a more stolid philosophy. They fought with a stoicism second only to that of the Hallowed Knights themselves, their circular phalanxes grinding forwards like millstones to crush the unruly mobs of demons between them. Shields slammed forward to trap plague-bearers and yelping beasts, as prosecutors dove down to smash them flat with all the precision of the arrows fired from the bows of the judicators advancing behind the liberators. He saw a liberator driven beneath the water by a flailing creature. Before he could reach the unfortunate warrior's side, blue light exploded upwards from the water, signalling another hero's soul sent back to Sigmar's forges. He killed the demon as it turned towards him, and then whirled, bisecting a plague-bearer as it leapt into the air, sword raised over its head. "Too many of them," Gardas thought. Everywhere he looked, demons leapt and capered. It was like the Gaia-tracked Fen all over again, only this time there was no realm gate to close. He looked at the great unclean one. It was no Bolothrax. Though such creatures bore a resemblance to one another, they were as much individuals as any Stormcast. He'd learned that much in his time in Nurgle's garden, and more besides. It had been Bolothrax who had first spoken the name of Pupa Grotes as he pursued Gardas. The demon had bellowed of the canker afflicting the Oak of Ages past, of the champions arrayed against the Stormcasts, of the Rotfane the profane tor, and the gelid gush, and more than that. Bolothrax had been overly loquacious, in the way of those who think words alone can break a spirit. But Gardas's spirit was not broken. He would do what no other champion of Sigmar had been able to do, and bring the God-King's words to the Radiant Queen, thus removing the mark that Nurgle's garden had left on his soul. And maybe he would silence the ghosts which yet clung to him in doing so.
Caradan, help us.
Only the faithful, he croaked. He could see their faces everywhere, rising from the sludge in the spray of demonic bile. Victims of plagues long past, men, women and children he had not been able to save. Nurgle had been his enemy for longer than he had ever suspected. The ghosts crowded around him, clutching at him, begging him for aid that he could not give. Anger lent him new strength.
Only the faithful,
he snarled, shattering a demon blade and chopping into its wielder's chest. A second blade glanced from his shoulder plate, and he spun. Gardas bashed the plague-bearer from its feet with a swipe of his hammer. Before it could even attempt to rise, a halberd flashed, removing its head from its shoulders. Grim tore his weapon free of the demon's remains as it sank below the swirling waters and said,
"The big one is our true foe."
"Agreed, Loras," Gardas said. "But there's an army between him and us." He crossed his weapons and caught a descending plague sword at their crux. The plague-bearer groaned, and Gardas kicked it in its bulging belly, knocking it backwards. As it fell, Grim's Griffhound shot forward and leapt upon it, savaging it mercilessly. He ignored the demon's squeals and turned back to Grim.
"And we'll have to carve ourselves a path." "It seems Ultrades beat us to it," Grim said, gesturing with his halberd. "Look."
Gardas did, and felt his heart stutter in his chest, as his fellow Lord Celestant led a wedge of stormcasts through a gap in the enemy ranks, straight towards the greater demon. Their charge slowed as they reached the thick slop emanating from the demon's flabby haunches, where filth and water had mingled to form a tarry barrier. Ultrades tore his men a path, and a phalanx of liberators lurched forward, shields raised. Pupa Grotesque glared down at the interlopers and bellowed in rage. A boulder-like fist descended from on high, and stormcasts were crushed, their bloody forms swiftly discorporating. The massive flail whirled, and whole retinues were hurled back like broken dolls. Only Ultrades and his decimators made it past these obstacles, but their blows rebounded harmlessly from the great unclean one's elephantine hide. Pupa Grotesque roared in fury and swiped out one long arm to send shattered bodies flying. Many vanished in explosions of blue light, while others sank without a trace in the noxious waters. Ultrades himself was nearly felled, driven to one knee in the water by a blow from Pupa Grotesque's flail. He strained against the weight of the weapon, even as he was driven deeper and deeper into the filthy waters. Ultrades was strong. All stormcasts were. But even he was no match for such a creature. Nonetheless, he was keeping the beast occupied, which meant they had a chance, however slim. "We have to move quickly," Gardas thought, and looked at Grim.
"Hold here. Rally our brothers. Keep them away from that beast."
He turned.
"Morbus, to me!"
A burst of lightning danced across the water, frying a plague beast in mid-bound. Lord Relictor Morbus stepped through the swirling cloud of ashes.
"I am here, Lord Celestant. Proceed, and I shall follow," he rasped.
Gardas nodded sharply and began to bludgeon his way towards the greater demon. He lashed out with sword and hammer as he moved. Both weapons crackled with white fire as he slew plague-bearer and beast of Nurgle alike when they dared interpose themselves. Morbus followed close behind, lightning snarling from his reliquary to streak across the waters towards their foe. The crackling bolt slammed home, and the great unclean one reeled with an agonized roar. Smoke boiled from his gaping paws as he stretched out his long arm towards Morbus, who drew the beast's attention away from his Lord Celestant with a second bolt of lightning, as accurately aimed as the first. "Sigmar bless you, Morbus. As ever, you know what I require before I ask," Gardas thought, as he charged beneath the sweep of the demon's flail. The demon turned away from Ultrades, who sank back into the water exhausted. Morbus lashed out with his hammer, shattering one of the creature's fingers. Pupa Grotes roared out unintelligible curses, and, ignoring his wounded digit, plucked Morbus from the water. He raised the struggling Lord Relictor up and examined him, as Morbus struggled futilely in his grip. He said something in a rumbling, glottal voice that was too deep to be understood by human ears, and lifted Morbus higher. The great unclean one's grotesque jaw distended, gaping wider than seemed entirely possible, even for such a massive being. Gardas put on a burst of speed and ran up a stump of rotten driftwood. As he moved, he summoned a word from the pits of his memory. No, not a word, rather a name. A name spoken by Bolothrax in his heedless gloating. The true name of the being that called itself Pupa Grotes. And to a demon, its true name might as well be a blade aimed at its black heart. Gardas leapt, sword raised, and screamed the name, spitting the deranged syllables as if they were bolts from a crossbow. The name quavered on the stinking air, and the great unclean one turned, eyes wide, Morbus all but forgotten. Gardas brought his sword down, chopping through the demon's thick wrist, freeing the Lord Relictor in a geyser of foulness. The demon shrieked and reeled, clutching at his wounded limb. Stormcast and Demon Hand crashed into the water, and Morbus swiftly pulled his way free of the spasmodically twitching hand.
"Morbus! Now!"
Gardas cried as he landed. Morbus rose, reliquary in both hands, and began to chant. He called out to the Tempest, and the Tempest answered. Crackling bolts split the skies, swathing Grotes in sacred lightning. Gardas watched as bolt after bolt struck the staggering monstrosity, even as the demons around him turned away, eyes seared by the light of Sigmar's wrath. Pupa Grotes's flesh began to smoulder and turn black. Steaming cracks appeared in his body, and the demon abruptly stiffened, mouth wide, in a scream that never came. There was a deafening bang, and the demon exploded like a sack of rotting offal left too long in the hot sun. The effect was immediate. The filth and sludge that marked the waters began to clear, turning to ash and crumbling away beneath newly crystalline waters. The clean waters ate at the remaining demons like acid, dissolving them even as they fought or tried to flee. Gardas dipped his hand into the waters as they surged around him, and felt his weaknesses and hurts fade away.
"It is like the rivers of home," Ultrades said in wonder, as Morbus helped him to his feet.
He looked at Gardas.
"Did you know that this would happen?"
"I had hoped," Gardas said. He watched as the last of the demons were dispatched, and turned, staring out over the river. In the sound of its waters, he thought he could hear a woman's voice, singing an unfamiliar song. Hesitantly, he placed his palms over the water, trying to feel something, anything that might tell him that he wasn't simply hearing things. As he peered down, he thought he could see something in the reflection on the water. He looked up as a shadow passed over it.
"Tegras! Can you see anything?"
he called out, as the Prosecutor Prime swooped overhead.
"Aye, though it might simply be a trick of the light,"
Tegras called down as he circled around.
"There is an emerald light where the river's bed should be."
Gardas looked at Morbus.
"Morbus, do you..."
"He feels it," Grim said,
splashing towards them, accompanied by his Griffhound and Zavaclius.
"We all do, Gardas. Every one of us."
The Lord Castellant looked at him warily.
"What is it? Who is she? Who is singing?"
Gardas shook his head. "You know as well as I, Loras. She is the one we have come to find." He motioned to the vast shape of the Oak of Ages past, and the clear, shining waters that now spilled from the cleft in its trunk. "There is a reason the enemy had no more luck finding her than we did. She was hiding beneath their very noses, in a place they thought already conquered.
"She is here,"
he said, voice rising.
"The gate to Athelweard is here. We have found the Hidden Veil."
Chapter 13. Nurgle's Deluge. Torglug shook his head, trying to clear the flies from his ears, as the skaven grey seer chattered obsequiously up at the Glotkin. The creature had summoned them to the banks of the Jellied Gush. At Torglug's suggestion, the Ratkin had been placed on the invader's trail, and had pursued the enemy across Rotwater Blight. Their skulking spies had scurried in the wake of every battle, keeping track of the foe's movements. And now, at last, it seemed the time had come to run their quarry to ground.
"Storm things pass into the river,"
the Grey Seer chittered, gesticulating towards the water.
"The water! It is the portal!"
As it spoke, there came a sound like 100 rats gnawing 100 stones, and the vermin lord, Vermalanx, dropped into reality. The rat demon shrieked at his charge, snapping long fangs in obvious agitation. The Grey Seer shied away from this display, and Torglug wondered what contest was being waged between master and servant. The rats aped men in that way more than any other, always seeking the advantage, even over their own kind. The rat demon was clearly enraged, and Torglug suspected that the Grey Seer had been ordered to report the whereabouts of Ethelweard to Vermalanx first. Whatever the reason for it, the Vermin Lord's anger was like the sweetest bile to Torglug, and he extended his axe between the rat demon and his servant.
"You are ceasing this unseemly display, Vermin," he rasped. "We are being allies in this endeavour, and we will be needing every one of us to take the Hidden Veil and its mistress." "If this treacherous rat isn't simply lying,"
Vermalanx hissed, glaring at the cowering Grey Seer.
"If this place is indeed beneath the river."
"It would make a certain sense," Otto Glott said, twirling his scythe.
Idly, he swatted at the flies that clustered about the crusted wounds in his belly.
"Why else would they come here? Into the very heart of Grandfather's Blight."
He looked at Torglug and inclined his head.
"A good plan, this, letting the rats skulk and spy."
"I'm pleased you're satisfied, Master Glott,"
Torglug rumbled. He shook his head and looked at the now pristine river, sparkling in the setting sun.
"He's under us the whole time,"
he murmured, leaning on his axe.
"We're running around and here it is. How she must be laughing."
He looked aside at the portly shape of the sorcerer Slaugoth, who stood nearby, wrapped in his ragged cloak, leaning on his boil-covered staff.
"Why did we not look here, Jolly One? Why was it the rats who were finding it first?"
"We assumed nothing would survive in such close proximity to Pupa Grotesque, that's why,"
Guttrot Spume interjected, before the sorcerer could reply, his tentacles coiling and clenching about the haft of his axe. The champion stood on the other side of Slaugoth, glaring at the river as if it had offended him.
"More fool us, I'd say."
"Quiet,"
Torglug snapped, irritated by Spume's presence. The other champion had grown increasingly infuriating since the fall of Profane Tor. Spume seemed to regard the continued assaults of the Lightning Men as a personal affront, rather than as the danger it truly was. But Torglug knew better. The Stormcasts were anything but weak to get as far as they had. They had humbled Spume, Slaugoth, and the Magoth lords alike, and crushed every obstacle that the Grandfather had placed in their path. Normal men they were not. There were vast things afoot, in the spaces between moments. Torglug could feel them, deep in his blighted marrow. The Grandfather stirred uneasily on his throne, and the world shuddered, as if slowly coming awake after a long sleep. He looked up at the sky, peering at the greenish clouds, wondering what force lurked above, watching. What power had sent them, these stormcasts? And why now? He looked at the Glotts, considering. They were not worthy, those three. Girk, perhaps, but Otto and Ethrak were fools, and lazy ones at that. industry was a dirty word to them. They knew nothing of effort, and their only loyalty was to one another. It was not they who had poisoned the life wells, or conquered the tribes of the Garenic Highlands. It was not the Glots who had tamed the Ogors of the Craven Peaks, or decimated the sacred groves of Tyre. Yet they reaped the grandfather's rewards, while better men were left to sit and simmer, forgotten. Torglug's grip on his axe tightened, and he wondered what might happen in the hours to come.
"Deep in thought, woodsman,"
Slaugoth murmured, startling him. The sorcerer peered at him, yellow eyes narrowed in speculation, as if he could read Torglug's thoughts.
"What are you thinking, despised one?"
"Nothing of import," Torglug said.
"They say that you were once a man of this realm, Ironhood,"
Slaugoth pressed.
"I myself come from more distant climes, though I find the air here quite congenial."
He smiled widely.
"They say that the grandfather himself tutored you in the ways of pox and plague while you rotted in a pit. It must have been something to see, especially for a barbarian from the wilds of Gyron,"
the sorcerer said slyly.
"My grandfather is blessing me,"
Torglug said. He looked at Slaugoth.
"Why are you asking?"
He leaned closer to the sorcerer.
"Are you thinking Torglug is worried?"
"Not worried. Plotting, perhaps, as we all are in our own ways,"
Slaugoth said. He smiled as if amused.
"We all had our designs on the glory to be had from this moment, all save that fat fool Morbidex. We all wish to stand here alone, beneath Grandfather's benign gaze, to claim the Magoth's share of the credit, and instead..."
"McLots," Spume growled. "The Bathers Three."
He shook his head, and the kraken mouth in his side snapped angrily.
"Snakes and rogues they are. No better than the Skaven."
Spume grunted and looked at Torglug.
"We're for it now, woodsman. We're under their maggoty thumbs, and I'll be barnacled if they don't claim this was all part of some blasted plan."
"Grandfather will be knowing the truth,"
Torglug said confidently. He lifted his axe and held it parallel to the ground.
"Now, what are we to do?"
he called out to the Glots.
"Simplicity itself, woodsman,"
Otto said, planting his scythe.
"We go for a swim."
He looked at his brother Ethrak.
"Ethrak, O second favored sibling, that river is too pure by half. Summon grandfather's deluge, so we can flood this place for good."
"A meritorious idea, brother from my mother's womb,"
Ethrak said.
"Gates can be forced open as well as unlocked. Slaugoth, attend me, O portly one."
Ethrak snapped his fingers at Slaugoth, whose head bobbed in agreement.
"A commendable thought, Master Glot. I most heartily agree,"
the sorcerer murmured, scratching his chins.
"We could fill that entire vale with noisome fluid, and thus claim it forever in the name of grandfather's infinite putrescence."
He made a pudgy fist.
"Serve those silver-skinned pests right for the drubbing they gave me. They tore down my sludge-walled keep without so much as a by your leave, and washed away my lovely filthy reins with their god-blasted tempest. Aye, let us wake the deluge and drown them all."
"More than that, I think,"
Ethrak said.
"Oh, we'll flood it good, but we'll take its mistress captive and haul her in chains of fungus and mouldy bone to grandfather. The Radiant Queen is hidden from us for far too long, my friends. She will hide no longer. Tonight, Alariel is ours, and she will be in a cage in the grandfather's garden, and Gyron ours by the first rays of morning."
He clapped his hands together in satisfaction.
"Oh, yes, 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 and yes again," Otto roared. "Ha! Yes, that'll do. Kirk, give the signal. Load as you like, my lad. Call them all. Every drone and nurgling, every Magoth and beast. Bring them all here, double quick. We're going in."
Torglug winced as Girk rose to his full height and threw back his misshapen head to unleash a deafening howl. The grey seer cowered, hairy hand paws pressed over its ears, Spume stuffed tentacles in his rotted ear canals. Slaugoth hunkered down and turned away, body clenched against the sound. The howl stretched up and out, riding the breeze across the vast wilderness of Rotwater Blight. And in the middle distance, as the echoes of the howl faded, warhorns answered Gurk's call by the score. Chapter 14. Secrets of Æthelweard. Grim pushed himself to his feet with his halberd, Talon by his side, chirruping nervously. They were atop a lichen-clad slope of rock. Above their heads stretched the undulating shape of the River Vitalis, strange glimmerings of light playing across its underside. Other stormcasts were rising to their feet around him, shaking off the effects of the transition to this hidden bower. "Beautiful, isn't it?" Gardas said, sitting nearby, his hammer across his knees. He was gazing out over the slope, across the vale which stretched out beneath them as far as the eye could see. It was breathtaking, Grim had to admit. Alariel's hidden vale was so large that it had its own mountain ranges, stretching off into cloudy distances. Each of these was draped in evergreen forests and hung with glittering waterfalls so pure that they hurt the eye to even look upon them. "All of Gairon, I am told, once looked as this does," Gardas continued softly. He extended a hand. "See how the trees glow, Loras. Have you ever seen the like? They are as bright as the stars themselves." Grim said nothing. Instead, he noted the arboreal citadels that sprouted from the entwined trunks of those distant trees, and silently calculated their size. They must be massive. But who resides there? The thought was not a pleasant one. He was not beguiled by the gossamer floating through the warm air, or the brightly hued fantail birds that swooped above through the coloured mist. If this was a paradise, it was not one meant for man. He turned and saw that the closest stormcasts were, like Gardas, enraptured by the strange beauty spread out before them. He slammed the butt of his halberd down on the rock, once, twice, three times. Every eye turned towards him.
"On your feet," he growled. "Do we come all this way to look at the flowers, then? Do we fight our way through forest and swamp so you could gaze at the greenery? Up! 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 Or I'll have Talon on you. Up!" he roared. "We still have a queen to find. Or did you forget? Up, I say."
He turned towards Gardas.
"And you as well, Steel Soul. Up, Lord Celestant. There is an example to be set," he said, as he reached out a hand and hauled Gardas to his feet.
"I see something!"
Tegra shouted from above. The Prosecutor Prime swooped low over them in a wide circle.
"I see a grove down the slope, lined with standing stones of some kind. Not like those we saw in the Gaia Tract Fen."
Gardas looked in the direction that Tegras indicated, and then said,
"Lead on, O Sainted Eye.
That is as good a place as any to meet our hosts, if they are willing."
Grim formed the Steel Souls into a marching column. He left the others to their respective Lord Celestants. Savaclius's warriors split into bands and ranged out alongside the column of marching stormcasts, warily watching the trees that covered the lower part of the slope, while Ultradi's retinues followed the hallowed knights. Above them, Tegras and the other prosecutors drifted lazily through the air, keen eyes seeking any sign of danger. The storm hosts wound down the slope and through the trees that separated them from the grove Tegras had seen. Gardas led the way, Grim and Morbus close behind. Grim felt eyes on them the entire way, and every bird, insect, and beast fell silent at their approach. The stormcasts began to grow uneasy, and more than once Grim was forced to fall out of line and berate a warrior for hesitating in the face of the vast silence that had enveloped them. After the fifth such incident, as he rejoined Gardas and the Lord Relictor, he said,
"This place, it's waiting for something."
"It is not a place," Morbus intoned. "Not truly. It is Alariel's will made manifest,
and we are intruders here. She is drawing back from our approach like a frightened beast.
It is not us she fears, Gardas said.
He stared straight ahead as he moved, as if all of his attentions were fixed on a point beyond the sight of those who travelled with him. Grimm shivered softly, for as Gardas spoke, the trees seemed to rustle in agreement. Alariel is not simply queen of the realm of life. She is life itself, inextricable and inseparable. Nurgle's advances upon her realm have wounded her most grievously, in mind and soul. He shook his head. Also, the Sylvaneth whispered to me, as they bore me from the glade of horned growths. Since the Dark Gods invaded this realm, she has become withdrawn and cold, even from her most loyal servants.
Has she sealed herself away here, while her realm crumbles in anarchy and destruction? Grimm asked, incredulous.
Did Sigmar not seal the gates of Azir? Gardas said softly. The mortal realms burned as Azir prospered. We were each of us plucked from places where we might have done good, might have helped those who counted on us, to be reforged on Sigmar's anvil. He met Grimm's disbelieving gaze and continued. I learned more than true names and hiding places while in Nurgle's garden, Loras. The ruinous powers weave lies with truth. He looked away and half raised his hand as if to clutch at his head. He looked up abruptly and said, We are here. Grimm saw the grove. It was lined with spiral-etched menhirs, and sunlight marked its center. Gardas stared at it, as if uncertain of what to do next. Grimm looked at him.
What is it?
Gardas didn't meet his gaze.
Something is wrong, he said.